Welcome to Talent Hub Talk. I am Ben Duncombe, and on this podcast, I will be interviewing prominent and inspirational figures from both the local ANZ and global Salesforce Ohana. In today's episode, I am joined by Dan Macbeth. Dan is the Salesforce Practice Manager for Devanti in New Zealand. And through the episode, we talk about his career before Salesforce and how he found his way onto Salesforce projects. We then talk about his role as a Salesforce Practice Manager. And Dan does manage a really decent-sized Salesforce practice. So we get into what that role entails and some of the challenges that he faces day-to-day. We then look at some of the upskilling his team has done around hiring people from a non-Salesforce or even non-technical background, and training them and bringing them through and making them successful consultants. And we also look into the New Zealand Salesforce market and some of the projects and challenges that they face and the reasons that it's a great place to continue developing a Salesforce career. I hope you enjoy the episode. And if you do, please subscribe for future episodes that are coming through. So Dan, thank you so much for joining us all the way from Auckland.
Pleasure to be here.
So look, we've got a few things to run through today. We're going to talk more about your background and the role you play at Devanti. But yeah, Let's go right back, way before Salesforce. What did you want to be? What did you do in your early days, your early career before the Salesforce bug hit?
Yeah. Oh, God, I was trying to think about this when we were preparing for it. I was trying to put together a bit of a list, and it's many and varied. I don't know, like I was a paper boy twice. Is that relevant?
Yeah.
I don't know. I was a waiter, sous chef, pizza chef, barman about 5, 6, 7 times, something like that. And did the university track, obviously. I wasn't sure what I wanted to be when I was young. In the UK, you get choice of like 6 universities you can go to, like UCAS it's called. 3 of them were going to be a drama school, so I was going to be an actor, or 3 of them were going to be university. And I ended up choosing university, went up to Glasgow University. Did the usual work, you know, hospitality, data entry clerk, all that sort of stuff. And then only really probably found like a career brain probably when I was about 25. So I had a lot of fun at the University of Life. And I don't know if you've ever been to Glasgow. If you've ever been to Glasgow, you can probably understand why. And I kind of like, you know, that's like a good joke and a good cliche, but actually all that sort of like bar work, like hospitality work, working in offices, doing random jobs, it does actually prepare you quite well for a future career, because it means that you're quite sort of well-rounded as an individual, I guess.
Sure.
So what happened next? Met my future wife, a Kiwi in the UK, working in a bar, as you might expect, on her OE.
Yeah.
And we hung out in Glasgow together for about a year and a half. And then she dragged me back to New Zealand, as any Kiwi would kind of understand is the way it goes, basically.
Sure.
If you sort of fall in love with a young Kiwi, you're going to get dragged back there at some stage. So we rocked up in Christchurch. She's a Christchurch girl. Again, like big life choices. I was still at uni. Why was I still at uni when I was 25? That's a different story entirely. And I was sort of scratching my chin and thinking, I did philosophy, really useful in the technology industry. And I was sort of scratching my chin and thinking, am I going to carry on? I was going to do a PhD. And then I kind of thought, you know, I'm spending a lot of time in the library in quite small groups. Is this really the person I am? And I decided to sort of branch out. So I finished off my degree and then rocked up at Telecom, and I think, well, AKA Spark. And that was when things sort of really kicked off there. Like loads of people, like if you look at Devanti in our office, so many people have worked at Telecom or Geni or Spark over the years, and their training that they do for, you know, when they bring you on board, like it's excellent, you know. So I was in a customer service sales role, and just like that sort of like that customer focus, bit of like process mindset, the fledglings of how you use a CRM to sort of look after customers. I think they ingrain it pretty well in you there. Yeah, so okay, that was sort of grounded, yeah, and worked my way through Telecom for a few years.
So then how did you end up on a Salesforce project or in a Salesforce role?
Yeah, it was a while after that. So did Telecom work for a bit, started dabbling in CRM, so sort of right now, CX, if anybody knows that. And that was good because that started to show me that these sort of business processes that lead your customer service efforts, like you don't need to be a developer, you can configure stuff. Wrapped up my time in New Zealand, went back to the UK, and I started working at a like a really random luxury lifestyle management firm called Quintessentially.
Randomly, so, I know it's in Soho, right? They're based in Soho. Yeah, I know that because I used to work in Soho as well. I worked on Dean Street and we used to get them always coming in. I worked in a bank at the time. So I remember it being quite a cool brand.
Yeah, they are like far and away the coolest company I've ever worked for. Like I frequently thought, like, what am I doing here? So they'd be like, all that random stuff, like you are ultra high net worth and you're in Monaco and on a whim you decide that you want to get, you know, a set of drums ferried over to your boat at 2:30 in the morning, and you would sort of pick up the phone to Quintessentially and they would make it happen for you. And that was nuts. So the brand stuff of it is really cool, but I was just lucky because they were B2C. So Quintessentially, the brand to private individuals, that was what built their business. And then just when I joined, they were going B2B. So they were starting to deliver services for the likes of MasterCard and like Ferrari, Visa. All these brands where if you buy, you know, a credit card, if you have a credit card from MasterCard, you get a global concierge service. And that's when the Salesforce thing kicked in, because we were sort of service cloud dealing, like it was ridiculous. Quintessentially had like about 28 different offices. Their staff spoke 15 different languages. And I got I was kind of like an operations project manager, and we were using Salesforce to do loads of cool stuff. Like if you're in Russia, we would use caller ID to recognize who you were and route you to a Russian speaking concierge and pop up your name, and then they'd say, hey Ben, how are you? It's been a while since you've been in touch. Do you want the tickets for the blah 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 blah? So it was really like really fun to be able to play around with, like really sweat the asset on Salesforce there.
And when was this? Cool. Like when would that have been?
It was about 2011 I started there.
So a while ago, like in terms of like pushing the boundaries back then for what Salesforce was being used as on the whole.
Yeah, it was good. It was fun. I mean, there was like a lot of people would know New Voice Media, so the telephony platform. So really got a lot of like really sweated that asset as well. Yeah, like we were doing fun stuff like building like mobile apps. This wasn't a Salesforce mobile app, but it was a separate mobile app which sort of connected through to Salesforce. And I guess like what the team there, what we started to do was try to almost operate a bit of an internal consultancy. So the core job was to be an operations manager. There's me, there's my mate Seb, he was the IT manager, and it was to deliver the core service, like make sure the phone call's connected. But you'd be talking to people and be thinking like, maybe you need some sort of website where customers can place their service requests. So then you think Salesforce Community, you know, maybe some sort of follow-up afterwards. And then you think, you know, customer satisfaction survey driven through Salesforce. So we kind of got in this mode where you could just get quite creative around how you could, again, you know, sweat the asset of the platform, play around a bit, and then position that as a service to our customers. And then that for me sort of like twigged, and I thought, yeah, this sort of like this consulting mindset of, oh yeah, I know the technology capability, I kind of understand the problem you're trying to solve, let's try to put those two together and, you know, and see whether this is of interest. And that's when things really took off for me.
Sure.
In the Salesforce world. Yeah.
And is that when you left Quintessentially, is that then the move into consulting? Did you go back to New Zealand at that point?
I moved to Blue Wolf then.
Okay.
So I wasn't really sure what consulting was like, because, you know, it's a big wide world of consulting. What does it mean? Am I going to be suited and booted? Am I just going to be doing things on whiteboards all the time? I'm like, how much do I need to know about the technology? And I guess there's like a confidence factor, right? I thought I was pretty good at my job, but you know, like consulting is often perceived to be like a really, really hard job, you know, like really, really difficult. So I sort of tested the waters with a couple of recruitment consultants, had a few sort of conversations with consultancies around, you know, what it looked like. And I realized that this sort of skill set that I'd, you know, put together accidentally looked like it was quite useful. So again, really lucky, like moved to Blue Wolf, and like Blue Wolf are a great operation. They were Blue Wolf then just before they got purchased by IBM. And again, their sort of training, best practice, like methodologies was awesome. Loads of really cool brands they worked with. I was in like an engagement manager there. So a bit of delivery, bit of sales, bit of account management. Yeah, I had a good fun, what was it, about a year and a half or 2 years with Blue Wolf. It's good times.
Yeah, nice. So obviously you're now in a practice manager role.
Yeah.
for anyone that perhaps isn't working in consulting or maybe would like to work in consulting, like what does a practice manager do apart from the obvious manager practice? And what are some of the biggest challenges that you as a practice manager face?
Probably the challenges are balance of the different aspects of the role, right? So there's obviously there's a huge people aspect of it. Like if you're a consultancy, you don't really sell anything else. You don't have any products apart from your people's time and their brains and the effort that they put into their work. So, keeping people happy, engaged, excited at scale is a big challenge because you've got a competing demand, which are your customers. And again, like if you don't have your people and you don't have your customers, then you haven't really got very much as a consultancy. So another large part of the role would be to customer facing. So all the practice leads, stroke principals at Devanti own accounts in some way, shape or form. It might be an exec sponsor, you might be an account manager, you might get involved in some delivery governance. So that takes up a lot of time as well. And I guess probably the final thing there would be, so you're trying to do that, that makes for quite a busy week, right? There's only 40 hours in the week, supposedly. But consultancy is always changing, right? Because Salesforce is always changing. Because like the engine of Salesforce will be bringing out something new. You know, Commerce Cloud, for example. Commerce Cloud wasn't at the tip of everybody's tongue a year and a half ago. There were a few customers around. It was going through the cloud craze, demandware mashup. And then you're sitting there thinking, is this something that Devanti want to invest in? Don't know. Do we want to build the capability? Is there other customers? And then before you know it, Salesforce have got behind it. And now it's a big deal. Yeah. So you kind of like, you have to like think about the future whilst you're doing the now. And that's like a mental challenge, obviously. Sure.
The success and failure in consulting often comes down to, I guess, utilization, right? Yeah. Is there a magic formula?
Yes, but I'm not allowed to say that. I think we're quite lucky because of the style of work that we look to do. So we, not exclusively, but a lot of our customers are enterprise who are like, they've committed to long-term digital transformation, right? So great. Well, hey, great term, long-term digital transformation, right? So what that means is, we would work with them on a program basis rather than a project basis. Sure. So you might have a lot of work in pre-sales, right? So you might have to invest a whole bunch of time to really get to know a customer, get a sort of mutual respect and a bit of trust going on. And that might take time. That might take 6 months or 9 months for you to, mutually get to a point in time where you've kind of made up your minds together of where they want to go with their business and with Salesforce supporting it. Then they're then in a situation where they've got a plan for a year, or they've got a plan for 3 years. So from the utilization perspective, you build the right team, and you make sure that team is, well-liked by the customer and from my perspective is enjoying what they're doing. But then the utilization kind of takes care of itself, right? Because you're on a rolling program. You're not in a stop-start project. You're collaborating on the outcomes. So you're in this more lucky situation where you're not having to sort of chase the next project.
Yeah.
So we try to, as much as possible, you build that sort of long-term program view out with our customers.
Yeah, because I guess, and the challenge on the flip side of that is, like you said, keeping people happy can be difficult if they're engaged on one project, right, for the foreseeable. Like if they're there for 3 years, a lot of people want to dip in and out of different projects. So you have challenges on both sides. You want to keep the customer happy and they want the same people the whole time because they know the business. But then those people want a new challenge and I can imagine the headache that provides.
Yeah. I mean, if one of your listeners could give me the answers to that one, answers on the back of a postcard, please. I mean, that is a challenge. You can go some way to softening that blow by talking about the work that happens within the client. Because this might be a client who's, they're only one client in one industry, but they're doing sales, service, CPQ, community cloud, bit of integration. There's business consulting, and you're also delivering multi-cloud with marketing services, and you've got a bit of human-centered design or UX thrown in there. So I guess I mean, you'd have to ask the team who may not agree with me, but like, if there's enough diversity within any given customer, that in and of itself can keep the team happy.
Sure.
Like a good, like, I mean, we've got, I don't think they'd be happy for us to give them a shout out, sort of Waste Management here is one of our longest running customers. And some of our team have been on Waste Management for years, but they frequently do cool stuff, right? You know, they do Salesforce mobile apps, and they do chatbot, and they, you know, got cool stuff going on analytics. So the team there, like, love it, because, you know, the next quarter has always got something interesting, different, cool, fun to do, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense. So hiring and retaining staff is a challenge. Yeah. And, you know, we see, like, so many partners are fighting over the same talent, which you have to do to a degree, right? You have to hire experienced people in certain angles. But what's been your approach to not just doing that?
Yeah, I guess a controversial point would be that you don't own your employees, right? So your employees, if they want to leave for whatever reason, you know, growth, you know, a bit more money, because something didn't quite work out for them, or, you know, just for the plain old fact of the matter that they maybe just got a wee bit bored because they've been in the same role, then that's fine, right? So I think, you know, number one for me is just like getting over that, right? Respecting the fact that people will stay and people will go. It's the nature of the beast. Obviously, you want people to stay. And I guess another, probably an honest point of view would be, if it's just about money, and if the conversation you're having with someone is solely around salary, then you've lost anyway, right? You're having the wrong conversation.
Sure.
You know, salary has to be a factor. You know, I don't work for free, neither do you, and neither does anybody else. But if it's just around that, you're not in a good position. So we need to have a number of things, whether it's the quality of the work that we do, the type of engagements we do, the overall culture, career growth opportunities, and salary, so that you can have a fair and honest conversation with someone and say, here are the reasons why we would like you to stay, whilst also having that honest conversation where you're saying, well, look, if it's not for you because there's a better opportunity somewhere else, then happy days. Because I think what, and it's probably quite different, I'd imagine, from the Australian market, is the New Zealand market's really small. So your employee today will be your customer tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, your customer today will be your employee tomorrow. So, like, I think it's really important to make sure that when people leave, they're allowed to exit gracefully, because it's just the way of the world,
sure.
You know?
Yeah, and I've noticed that with the New Zealand market, like, everyone knows everyone. And, like, I say that here, like, everyone knows everyone, but in New Zealand, it's a different level. And I think that another point on that, like, absolutely, like, references are being done all the time, whether you know it or not. And I think how you treat an employee will come out, like, if it's good or bad, and probably more so if it's bad. And I think, you know, even if people aren't giving references out and saying, call this person, like, they're still being done. So, it's so important in a small market that you act in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there is a pretty close-knit ecosystem in New Zealand as well, where it's in everybody's interest for the ecosystem to continue to be successful. So it's in, you know, it's in Devante's interest for its competitors to succeed as well.
Sure.
Because, you know, it's not going to be much of an ecosystem if there's just, you know, Devante is the only partner working here. So if how that manifests is, you know, staff moving around and us inheriting staff from our competitors and a bit of that going on, that's probably not a bad thing. I mean, what you want to avoid, or what you need to avoid, is just a constant merry-go-round of constant churn, because then customers get, you know, bad outcomes, nobody's really focused on the core job. But, you know, a bit of fluidity in the market is not a bad thing.
Sure. But you have been successful and very successful in bringing people into the market, so people that don't necessarily have Salesforce experience. Why has that been your approach, but also how have you done that?
Part of the reason why it's an approach for Devante and maybe personally is because I don't really have a Salesforce background as such. You know, I've been on the tools to a limited degree, but I've got, like, other, you know, life or work skills that now I find quite useful for my current job.
A paper round, right?
So when you, exactly. You know, the hard work and dedication to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and deliver papers for an hour, 5 days a week, and get paid £12 a week.
In the UK, you know, as well, freezing cold, right?
Yeah, Well, it was a shocker. So it worked for, you know, like it's kind of worked for me. So you think, but on paper, there will be lots of candidates out there with lots of certs because Salesforce have set up the program to work that way. And certs are useful to an extent, but I think we've been quite fortunate in finding, or and going to look for, to be fair, a bunch of candidates who may join us with no certs, but have got either real world experience or some other software experience or some other work experience that we know, or we are quite confident that you can turn that quite quickly into a pretty well-rounded Salesforce consultant.
Sure. So because we see them all the time, like people are looking to break into the ecosystem, and there are so many tools available now to make that a smoother transition. It always makes me laugh when someone reaches out to me and says, Ben, I'm really passionate about getting into the Salesforce space. And I'm like, okay, cool. So what have you done to make that a reality? And they're like, no, this is the first conversation I'm having. So I'm like, so how can you say you're passionate about it if you've not even been on Trailhead yet? Like you've not even done anything you've never touched Salesforce. So how can you actually be passionate about the system? So how can someone actually stand out to you if they are looking to make a move into the ecosystem?
Yeah, I would say that some level of effort around Trailhead obviously is important. But I guess it's like, how do you position yourself? So if you've spent a bit of time on Trailhead, maybe it's not a list of the trails that you did. It's the things that you built. Because loads of the trails are not just theory-based. Well, as we all know, like they're not just theory-based. They're asking you to roll up your sleeves and go and build something. So when I built that cool little, you know, whether it's the Mars app or whatever, the actual practical thing that you built, if you can sort of evidence that or talk to that in an interview, then immediately you're showing a prospective employer about how you've taken theory and you put it hands-on before you've even had the job. And I think, you know, like on the spectrum between I've done a few trails and I've worked really, really hard on trails, I'm here and these were some of the cool things that I built. Like, you know, there's light years between the two there.
Sorry. You mentioned, like, obviously you've taken people from different backgrounds. Like I've seen over the years you've hired, like, teachers, you've hired all sorts of, like they don't necessarily come from an IT background at all. Obviously, you have hired some software engineers into Salesforce and so on. But what do you look for then in a potential hire other than Trailhead badges? But what are the, like when someone comes into your office and they're looking for their first role, what are you looking for in them?
Yeah, I mean, you want to be able to walk out of that first interview. And if that interview was turned into a word cloud for customer to like stand out. Right. So anybody who is talking frequently about the time that they've spent with customers and customer service or the outcomes that customers want and so on and so forth, you know, you get the point. Like somebody who is focused on the outcome and the problem that is being solved for our end customer is very attractive, because you kind of think that that's a really, really hard skill to teach. Whereas learning Salesforce, like not trying to do anybody down, there's a lot of people in our team and you know and out there who put a lot of effort into learning Salesforce, but that can be taught. It's that like natural spark of curiosity and perhaps that focus on the customer that you're looking for.
Sure. Yeah, and I think like that's definitely something that people can work on, right? It's like not everyone has it, but it's something that you can work on, and that's not necessarily on Trailhead, but it's working out how you position yourself in an interview and what, like, a customer service role can have that, right? It doesn't have to be a technology role. It can be any, it really can be anything. And it's just how you frame the conversation.
Yeah. I mean, customer service roles are exactly that. You know, you're sort of given, so if you think about a consultant who's trying to solve a particular problem, they're given fragments of information, you know, sometimes filtered from different sources, and they've got to use the brain and go out there and try to find out the answers for it. If you think about a typical day in the life of a customer service agent, like who's good at the job, that's what they're experiencing. A customer is giving them fragments of information about a thing that happened or a problem that needed to be solved, and it's not all laid out on a handbook. You know, they need to sort of work out and work through the processes to solve that. So customer service roles for sure. But I mean, we've had, like, the last couple of years, we have a excellent young consultant with us who used to be an opera singer. You know, we've got a fantastic developer with us, Lisa, who used to be heavily involved in music at the Moscow Philharmonic Orchestra. You've got like a whole random range of people that I guess the point is, like, maybe it's more of a point for hiring managers, is that you've got to really look through a CV and don't just look for the key Salesforce words. You know, you kind of look at those other very niche roles that somebody has done and thought, oh, actually, that could be really interesting, because that is going to mean that that person is very well organized because they had, you know, an administration role. You know what I mean? And there's always more than just the Salesforce creds on any person's given CV.
Yeah, you know? And I just wish more companies would look at it that way, especially consulting companies, because that's where the volume is, right? So the odd end user might say, yeah, cool, let's hire someone from a customer service background or someone that comes from banking because we're a bank and they can learn Salesforce. But rarely do we see consulting companies really hiring people from left field. And also the ones that they do hire are typically grads, right? But there are so many people that aren't grads that are sat on the market trying to get into the ecosystem, might already have a couple of certs, but just aren't getting that break. And I think these are the people that need help.
Yeah. And it's quite competitive though, right? And I don't know, I mean, maybe it's you're supposed to be doing the questions, but I don't know if there's a noticeable difference in Australia, right? I don't know if there's more talent there, so roles are more heavily contested. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, like I think, well, it depends what the role is, right? If you're looking for a Salesforce developer, if you're looking for them in Australia or New Zealand, America, or anywhere, they're hard to come by. I think, like, I don't want to say easy, but easier to find an admin or like a functional consultant is still very hard to find. But getting someone with soft skills on the whole is challenging. And there are so many people out there with those soft skills that they don't have Salesforce, but just given that opportunity, like you said, it can be learned.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think on the whole, people just should be more open to it. And also, I was looking just before this conversation at how partners are scored. And I don't know if it's changed, but it used to be something like you had to hire a certain amount of new entrants to the market. So people that don't have certifications and they had to be certified within your business, that's their first cert. But I think that's a problem if that's still the case. And I couldn't verify if that was still the case. Because so many people get certs in their job search.
Yeah.
There's all of these people that I've just mentioned that are sat there looking for work with, you know, 3-4 certs.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
Yeah. That program is changing slightly. I think it's mid-year where they're trying to take the focus away, I guess, just from the numbers per se. And I think I kind of agree and disagree with you there, because previously we found that as quite a useful, you know, mechanism or incentive or motivation for our team who we had brought in maybe at grad level or from other industries to sort of, you know, give them a bit of a G up to get on the certification path. So I think, yeah, in the past, we found that quite useful. But I guess I like where they're changing it now is probably they're trying to look for more specialization and more like learning path and certification. So this idea of if you want to be, you know, a platinum partner, you just need to have X amount of new consultants and X amount of certs. That's being changed to more of a specialization track. So it's not enough just to have so many people on the CTA pyramid having done all the designer certs. We need a bit more of this. We need a little bit more of that. And you need to start sending your people down more specialist tracks. And I quite like that because it broadens the opportunities for people in the market. Like it makes them think that there are other options beyond, you know, becoming a CTA, I could go CPQ, I could go front-end commerce cloud. You know, it gives more options for
them. Yeah, agreed. And is that something that, I know you've got CPQ specialists and you've got marketing cloud and so on, but is the Devanti model now to have real specialists in particular clouds?
So yes and no. So I've not really seen that many projects where you're only doing sales or you're only doing service cloud. So I think there's a group in the middle there of sales cloud, service cloud, community cloud, and sort of platform that represents the core. And you'll be a strong consultant or end user if you've got a good grasp of those.
Yeah.
And then when you go beyond them, you know, CPQ, commerce, maybe field service, the marketing suite, that's where you sort of see a bit of diversification. So like the way that me and the team sort of think about it is that you're really looking for everybody to be in the playing in the middle space, you know, whether that's by experience or by certification, should know sales cloud, should know service community, stuff like that.
Sure.
And then we want to have probably about 10 to 20% of the team proficient in the niche areas or becoming less niche. Yeah. And then I'll be comfortable, right? So then I can go hand on heart to say, well, look, you know, 15% of the team are CPQ certified and experienced. So I feel comfortable that you could throw whatever you want to throw at us and we would be able to cope with it, you know? So I guess I'm talking about like foundation first and then a bit of specialization.
Yeah, and I think that's how our surveys have looked when we've done them, that most companies and teams expect to continue down that path rather than just being like a field service Lightning implementation partner or just having a team that just do FSL and others that do other things. And so, yeah, it's interesting. So before I let you go, you're from the UK, you're in New Zealand. Yeah. Why is New Zealand such a good place to build a Salesforce career?
It's not. No, jokes aside, I would say it's big enough to be interesting, but sufficiently small, you don't just feel like a drop in the ocean. You know what I mean? Yeah. So like we're like Devanti and its competitors and our customers have got enough size to be doing pretty cool stuff, whether that's the outcome or the Salesforce cloud or the size of the project for it to be interesting. But you're not in a morass of, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people on the project. You know, you've still got, you know, if you're a consultant, you've still got good access to the customer and you don't feel like you're just there, you know, in a delivery engine somewhere.
Yeah, nice.
You know?
Yeah, and I think that from what I've seen, that the projects just continue to get more and more complex and more challenging and the quality of resources is continuing to grow in New Zealand. You know, it used to be, and still to a point, it is like we'll get contacted from someone from the UK or from India, and they want to move to Sydney. Like that's their, like, oh, I'm looking to move to Sydney. Whereas we do see more people now that they've heard of the New Zealand market and they're you know, they're interested. Yeah. And I think that's great from like, there's a few key figures in the New Zealand market that are well known globally. And I think like the more and more people are hearing from them, the more attractive it will appear. But yeah, absolutely. I'm seeing people's careers develop really, really well in the New Zealand market and you know, adding interesting projects left, right and center. So I would agree with your sentiment.
Yeah, I think, and just to kind of add a little bit on there, I guess that size thing as well allows customers, again, to maybe take a bit more risk. So if you do a full-blown sales, service cloud, CPQ, plus billing, plus MuleSoft, build a bit of a mobile app and do a bit of a chatbot, you can do all of those things. Don't have loads at risk. It's not going to turn into a $40 million project. The market is not big enough. Yeah. So it allows you to innovate, but the risk is lower because the organizations are still a little bit smaller.
Yeah, yeah, nice. And if anyone listening wants to understand the trials and tribulations of being a practice manager, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Yeah, I mean, hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm frequently around on LinkedIn. Dan McBeth, you can find me there. Happy to chat through what's on our mind. Yeah. Shameless plug, a couple of webinars coming out from our side in the next couple of months as well. So if you have a look at Devanti Consulting on LinkedIn, there's various ones where we're trying to throw out a bit of thought leadership, which might give you a bit of an insight into what's on other people's mind.
I've really enjoyed the chat. Thank you very much. And cool. All the best.
Thanks a lot. Enjoyed it too.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Talent Hub Talk. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you could subscribe and also leave a short review. We're keen for this podcast to reach as many people in the Salesforce ecosystem as possible, and your reviews will help us do that.